Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 64 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been a great week in the gaming capital of the world here in Indianapolis. Cody, how's it going today?
It's going. It's a nice nice cold, rainy day here in the capital.
It's a terrible cold, rainy day.
It's a wonderful day.
It's been raining, sir. So, you know, our heart goes out to any listeners that might be down in the southern Alabama area where there's just been devastation from tornadoes. We hope everything's going okay for you guys who might be down there. And you know, we're thinking about you up here in Indiana where it's rainy, but not quite that rainy.
Yeah.
But what are we talking about today, Cody?
Well, we've got a few GM Academy topics to broach.
We do.
We have the usual... great goodness from the Game On inbox, but most importantly, the new hotness, the Lord of the Rings, the card game. We've got it, we've played it, and we're going to tell you all about it.
That's right. So we've got just lots of great stuff chock full in this episode, but we're going to get started with the rundown, which starts...
promptly. All right, it's time for the rundown, where we tell you all of the games we've been playing and other geekery we've been engaged in. But before we do that, John's going to tell you about our great sponsor at Myriad Games.
That's right. Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. But before I talk a little bit more about Myriad and do our due penance to Myriad Games, we got a little voicemail that we want to play first. So let's listen to that.
Hey guys, this is Matt from Vermont again. But I noticed that Cody's been using due penance a lot when thanking Myriad Games for their support of your show. And I not just as kind of like, you know, seeking absolution for sins. I'm not sure you've got a lot of sins going on there, at least not that Myriad Games could absolve you for. Anyway, maybe he's thinking about due diligence, but even that doesn't quite fit. Diligence is sort of like when one company checks out another company to make sure they're on the up and up before investing or selling or something like that. Anyway, I might make a suggestion that you say pay your due homage to Myriad Games, reverential appreciation, or you know, so I think that might be the more appropriate term. But anyway, small thing, just something I've noticed and started to bug me, so I decided I would test out your voicemail system and give you guys a call. Hope you're doing well. Keep up the good work. Love the show. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks.
And you have any comments on that, Cody?
He doesn't know what sins we may or may not have committed.
That's
against
right. No, and whether they're able to exact absolution or not is you know
one of the many services they offer. we do know the difference between diligence
services
and penance and all that, but
yeah.
It's joking
just for
around.
Fun. Yeah, no, I know from the tone of your voice, but I think it's probably pretty tongue in cheek from you anyway. But anyway, thanks for sending this out. That was pretty funny.
Father Dan can heal your gaming woes.
Perhaps he can. All right, well, you know, so just to talk a bit about Myriad Games, they are a great friendly professional game store, a model in the community in the world, I would say.
Wow.
For game stores. And, you know, one of the things that they do right now, what they have been doing, that they continue to do, is trades. And so if you have older games that you might want to trade in to Myriad Games for Myriad money, just send Dan an email and of what games you might have and what condition they're in, and he'll be happy to give you a quote. So I have currently a pretty large list of games that I'm going to be sending into him. It costs a little bit of money on my end for shipping, but you know the payoff in Myriad money and being able to trade games I don't play in for new games that I do play is pretty cool. So another cool service provided by Myriad Games, and you know I know we talk a ton about this store, but it is very cool for us because we're so far away. You know, I mean, if this was your local store, this would be an absolutely no-brainer. If you live in New Hampshire, Myriad Games has to be your store. I mean, it really should be.
Yes.
But, you know, we're here in Indianapolis, and we're still getting great service from them. So that says something. So that's what we got for Myriad Games. Go and check them out.
Yeah, and something mentioned on the trades, if you're an MVP member, you'll get a little kickback on your trade, too. You'll get some bonus Myriad money for that. So another reason to check out their MVP memberships. And just one more story about Dan. We talked about Rally Man on the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
And he gave me a call after he listened to it. And, you know, because we said it's not available in the U.S., you know, it doesn't have a U.S. publisher. And he called and was like, oh, we have it. You know, and I'm like, of course you do.
Of course you do.
So Rally Man is on its way here to me. So.
Outstanding.
So check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com.
All right, Cody, do you want to get started on what you've been playing?
Sure. I had a rare occasion to go to the Game On game night. My schedule was free that night. I ended up playing a bunch of racing games. I played Rally Man. I played Detroit Cleveland Grand Prix.
How was that?
It was good. It was it's an older Mayfair game. It's just the graphic design on the board is terrible. I mean, it's just an ugly game to look at, but it was a heck of a lot of fun, so I played that. Let's see, played a few games of the Resistance, and that's always a fun one. I think, you know, Werewolf is better for more people, obviously, but I would really like to play Resistance a few times. I still haven't played with the expansion that comes with the game itself. Mm-hmm. I'd really like to try that out with some folks. Other games I've been playing, I got you and I played Through the Ages.
Yeah, we
played the advanced game.
Right, we didn't play the full game, which gives you the final age. We didn't do that, but yeah. Still took us a good while.
Yeah, but man, that game is fun.
That is totally fun.
Other games I played, I guess the biggest one, literally, that I've played is Twilight Imperium. I finally got a chance to play it. There's a local group here that that pretty much does it once a month. They're pretty newbie-friendly. It was me and one other guy that was new, and played a 7-player game. It took us about 11 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. I figured I would go. I would be like, oh, that was neat, but I don't want to do it again. You know, I kind of would cross it off the list. But it's actually it's a really fun game.
Nice.
And it's not a difficult game to learn, but it's complex. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But you know, the time didn't really drag on until like that last hour or so, just because everyone was really tired. You know, yeah. I'd been there all day. But I'm going to do it again. I really, really enjoyed it. So.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was cool. Did you win?
I did not. I was kind of. I played it too slow because I actually built up quite a killer fleet. I just didn't do anything with them because I wasn't 100% sure on combat. So I guess I wanted to hedge my bet.
Sure.
And I went in toward the end and did some fighting, and I was just blowing away people. You know. So.
I've had that happen to me before, where I have a game with a lot of real complex rules, and there's a couple that I don't understand, but I don't want to go through the process of asking someone, could you explain this rule to me? So I just don't do that action, you know, for the entire game. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, somewhat. It's like I kind of got it toward the end. You know, I didn't want to slow things down, but yeah. I'll definitely probably be a little more aggressive next time. Another Fantasy Flight game that I played, an older one, is Warrior Knights.
Oh, yeah.
I got a chance to play that, and... I wasn't expecting a whole lot, but it is a fun game. It's got a great negotiation aspect to it, and it's got a little bit of an old school feel to it. But I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
So I'd recommend that, and you can get that cheap nowadays. I mean, you can get that real cheap.
Yeah, I think that was in like the FFG holiday sale this past time for cheap.
Yeah. Other things, I've played Tumbling Dice with a bunch of different groups, spreading that gospel throughout the land.
As it hangs dutifully on your wall.
That's right. It's a beautiful wall decoration. And my D&D 4th edition game is still going. Had its second session. We're just doing a heroic tier campaign, which is just levels 1 to 10, just to see if we want to continue with it. You know, we don't want to commit to a 3-year thing or something like that. But it's pretty good. I think we'll just stop at 10. It's like I still like 4E. There are a bunch of games I want to try. It's like I'd like to get a group here where we just do one-shots, because I love RPGs. I like reading RPGs, so it'd be cool just to get like a group of 4 people and just do one-shots of games.
Oh, nice.
And see, what do you like? What don't you like? Because RPGs can be hard to get to the table at times.
Mm-hmm.
That is about it, I think. Yeah, that's all I played.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good list.
Thank you.
My list was a little bit weak these last couple of weeks. I was not able to attend the Game On Game Night this last time, even though Cody was. I had some family in town, and so I was visiting with them. Did get one game to the table during the visit with the family, and almost all of my family, with the exception of like one cousin that lives in Virginia, all not gamers. And so we played Long Shot, which is a good big, you know, family party sort of game. And it was interesting that my cousins who were visiting in town, they had just spent a couple of nights in Louisville, Kentucky. And so they had gone to like a horse track or something, not like Churchill Downs or anything, but they, they'd gone to like a horse track and they were kind of had horse racing on the brain. So I was like, I've got a horse racing game that's kind of fun. And their eyes lit up, oh, that, bring that over. That sounds pretty good. And so we played Long Shot and had a real good time with that. I still, after playing it quite a few times, I think it plays just a little bit too long. Like when you get about two-thirds through the track, I just get that feeling of it's a samey sort of game anyway. You know, you're doing the same things every turn. There's not that much you can do. You can bet, you can take a card, you know, whatever. But, you know, you just sort of feel like, okay, it's time for this to start wrapping up here. And when you get towards the end, that's when people start playing all the cards to move horses back because they don't want the particular horses to win. And, you know, then it just gets a little bit slow for me. But overall, still a pretty decent game. And I think I came in second to last place. So once again, I'm bad at games, but I like to play them. So I did that. Got to play this past weekend a game of A La Carte with my kids. And A La Carte's a game that was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres this past year. It's a reprint from a game from the 80s, but a great game about cooking, which comes with just over-the-top crazy components. You have like a three-dimensional stove and a little frying pan that you're cooking your dishes in. And you know, your dishes have a recipe on them, the little cardboard tokens that you put inside of the frying pan. And then you have to, on your turn, add seasoning, which are these little plastic containers full of little, they're like little stones, like in Niagara, those kind of little strangely shaped rocks, or in ink and gold, and you have to dump those into your pot, your pan, and you have to do it a certain way. And if you get too many things in there, it gets over seasoned, and that ruins your dish. Or you can roll a die to heat up your dish, and then if it gets too past a certain point, then it burns the dish and it ruins it. And so it's real, real light. It's got a little bit of take that stuff. There's some special token, little coffee cup tokens that you can take that'll cause you to. You can season someone else's dish, so you can potentially over-season their dish. But as you finish the dishes, you know, get victory points for those. And then the one really cool dexterity element, this is why I want you to play this game with me at some point, Cody, is that there's a crepe that you can make. Everybody gets one crepe. And whereas most of the recipes require heating and some sort of seasoning combination, the crepe only requires a heating, and then you have to flip it. And so you put it in one side up on your in your frying pan, and every turn you'll roll the heating die and move whatever move it up. You know, I think the heating goes from 0 to 7. You can move it up 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever. And then after you heat, then you have two opportunities to flip the crepe, and you literally have to take your frying pan and try to flip it up in the air and turn it over, get it to land back in your frying pan. And if you do that, then you successfully complete your crepe, and you get like 5 points for it or something, you know. So it's a lot of fun, you know. Of course, my little kids, that's all they really wanted to do the entire time was try to flip the crepe. But that one's a whole lot of fun. I think that one, I'm not sure if that one has an American printing. I have like I think it's a French version or something like that, with where I had to get rules printed. And maybe it's German, but that's a really a lot of fun. Let's see, played Lord of the Rings card game with Cody a couple times. We're going to be talking about that one in a little bit. We went and got some wings at Buffalo Wild Wings recently and played a little two-player game, KGB versus CIA, or Cold War KGB versus CIA, which continues to be a fantastic two-player game, wouldn't you say? Plays in, you know, half an hour. If you know the rules real well and can just play it real fast, it's basically trumped up blackjack. It's got a blackjack mechanic. It's a whole lot of fun. The theme is pretty neat, and like that one. So, you know, other than the Through the Ages game that we played, it was the only big board game that I played. The other things that I've been doing have been more video game related.
Oh.
Shocking, I know. One is that we've Cody and I have both been playing in an online game of Through the Ages with fellow podcasters Jeff Engelstein and Russ Wakelin. And so we've been doing this four-player game. Jeff invited us to get involved in this, and it's been a whole lot of fun. It uses a system called Cyberboard, which is it's like a digital system for the board game with all of the stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot like Vassal, where it doesn't actually, I don't know this about Vassal, but it doesn't adjudicate the game for you. It is literally a virtual tabletop.
Right.
I mean, you know, you can cheat if you want to and draw a bunch of cards or whatever, but it's just kind of a virtual version of the game. But it doesn't do any adjudication, or doesn't run the game for you at all.
So like face down card decks are randomized and hidden, and so when you pull something from a deck, it turns over and, you know, and it's a random card, but Yeah, like Cody said, you can move your little tokens around, and if you move them in the wrong spot, you know, the video game will not slap your hand.
Right.
But Jeff will.
Jeff Engelstein will get you.
And it has a cool system of messaging where you can kind of write down what you're doing. And what it ends up doing is creating a move file that's just sort of a sequence of events and things and clicks that you're doing. And then that gets saved to a file. And then when you open it up, you load that move file from the previous player, and you can walk through it, you know, kind of step through the different steps, and you can see the messages that they went down, like, oh, now I'm going to take this civil action, now I'm going to do this. Then you can watch, you know, how the things got moved around on the board. And I think it's pretty cool. It's slow, you know, and I think it's probably going to take us a few months to get through this game.
Yeah.
With the way that it's playing. But it's a lot of fun, and, you know, so if you enjoy Through the Ages, that might be one you want to check out if you want to, you know, it's a really easy one to play with someone long distance. The other video game thing I've been playing more than just about anything lately is I got Portal 2, and I've been playing a lot of Portal 2, and it is fantastic. If you played the original Portal, this is just like that game, only about 100 times better. Wow. And the writing in it is hilarious and fun. All the puzzles are very cool. They've added some new elements in and some new kind of things that you can manipulate to solve puzzles and get out of the rooms and everything. And the story, I think, is just really cool. So there's also a co-op game now for Portal 2 that you can play either... well, I got the Xbox 360 version. Of course, there's some for PC and PS3 and that kind of stuff. But the Xbox 360 version, you can play split screen just in the same room, or you can actually play over Xbox Live and play over the internet. But in the cooperative version, you're each kind of a little robot and who has a portal gun, and each person's portal gun shoots two different colored portals. And so the way that they've designed the levels for the co-op game, you have to help each other out, and you have to sort of point out to the other person, I need you to put a portal here and here, you know, because I can't get to that point, you know, and you have to really work cooperatively to get through the levels. So a lot of fun with that. So that is pretty much my list of stuff I've been playing.
Boom.
Yeah. One other thing we want to talk about is Gen Con event registration.
Yeah, it is the season.
Yeah, and this past weekend was the opening day, I guess you want to call it, for event registration, where a whole lot of events go and sell out. So if you're hearing this and you haven't registered yet, you still can, and there's still lots of great events to be had, but some of those prime choice events probably already sold out at this point, especially things like True Dungeon.
There are some True Dungeon slots left.
Yes, yeah, but if you're looking for like an entire block of tickets, you probably aren't going to be in luck there. Some of the prime RPG stuff probably gone as well. But what did you sign up for Gen Con this year? We've talked a little bit about how we want to build our schedules this year, just off the mics.
Yeah, right now I haven't signed up for too much. I'm doing two True Dungeon runs. I'm doing a run with my family, and then we're doing another podcaster run this year with us, folks from Myriad Games, and folks from D6 Generation. So that should be good. We'll see. There's no Overpowered Dragon at the end this year, so
Thank goodness. Good news.
I'm doing on a Friday morning, there is a 5K called the Orc Stomp Fun Run, so Kaylin and I are doing that.
No actual orcs will be harmed in the stomp. Or will they actually be stomped?
I want some guy like, you know, at the turn or something, like dressed up like an orc. Like,
you have to step over.
Or like an orc hands you water or Gatorade or something.
That'd be funny.
And then the only other thing I've scheduled is I'm trying TerrorWorks for the first time this year. After listening to Rafe's report about it last year with the D6G, I'm like, I'll give it a whirl. You know, it's cheaper than True Dungeon. You know, I'll try it out. So
it's like True Dungeon with guns, right?
Yeah, but it's more... True Dungeon's not really a LARP necessarily, where TerrorWorks is a LARP. I mean, there's acting in it. You have a real story going on. Yeah, so trying that. As far as the other things I want to do, it's tough. You know, I like to spend a good bit of time in the dealer hall just so I can try new things and really take my time there. You know, there's open gaming and there's no real board game events that I want to sign up for just because, and I don't mean this to sound arrogant or anything. It's like, I usually get, you know, with John and I, we get to play most anything we're looking to play, you know, and I realize that's not the case for everyone. But I don't know. I'm going to look around for maybe a few, quirky events that may catch my eye and go for that. I will say, though, I want to give a plug. If you are looking for a board or card game event, look for Rogue Judges. A bunch of our friends help run that organization, and They do a lot of different board and card games, and they teach all rules, and they're great groups of folks. And where else can you play the Settlers of K'tizzle and trade guns for drugs?
The Vice Lords of K'tizzle.
Oh, Vice Lords of K'tizzle. Oh, yeah, I guess they're not settling it. So when you're looking for events, check out Rogue Judges. They offer a bunch of games, and you would do well to play a game with them.
Yeah, and as near as I can tell, I think they've expanded their repertoire of games quite a bit this year. So good news there. I am signed up for the podcaster run for True Dungeon. I've got that with so many thanks to Cody and to Cody's sister-in-law for helping to get that signed up for. So thank you, Kathy. We've also got I try to keep Thursday free. Because Thursday is, you know, first day of the con, and it's when the dealer hall opens up. It's like Black Friday shopping, you know. That's when the doorbuster deals are. There's the brand new games that come out, and I don't even know what those
and then you come home with Cadwall and City of Thieves.
I know. You just got to keep reminding me of those kind of things, okay?
I'll just be with you on Thursday. I'll be like, no.
Good. No. That's good. You got to keep me honest there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to try to plan out ahead of time what kind of new hotness we pick up right at the gate, but I always like to be there for that, for the big, you know, cattle rush in at the beginning. Give myself a Thursday to do that. So Friday, I'm actually signed up to go to the D6 Generation event that they're having. We're not doing any official events at Gen Con this year, but we are. I'm going to help them out. I think I'm actually end up running sound for them and doing some sound.
I'll probably show up for that as well.
Yeah. So there's tickets available for that. If I think there's like supposed to be a max of 100 people, so feel free to sign up for that one. I think they're calling it Play by Mob. So I don't know what that's going to be exactly, but it's some sort of game thing with all the D6G hosts. Doing that, I'm also going to be playing in a game of Sid Meier's Civilization, the board game. I agree with Cody. We get to play pretty much what we want. You know, when new games come in, we can find some folks to play with. And for other folks, that's really why they come to conventions, is they can get to play things like that. For me, it's all about long games. Like, I can very easily get hour and a half long games to the table. It's real easy to find folks to do that. But if I want to play something like Civilization, or I'm also signed up on Sunday morning to play a game of Rune Wars. So these are big 4 or 5 hour long games. That I really enjoy, but that it's just more of a task to get them together and to get an event together for that. So it'll be kind of cool too. The Rune Wars game is for new players, so that might go a little bit slow, but the Civilization game, at least the way that I signed up for it, it said it's for players who are already comfortable with the rules. So that...
That'll be nice if everyone that signs up is at that level. That will be cool.
Then, yeah, we pull our stuff out and just, you know...
But if you get one guy that's not, man...
Then
that's
everyone will spend the whole time explaining things to him. So, but, you know, it's fine. I kind of expect that at conventions anyway. And I think that is all that I signed up for. I tried to get into a Dresden Files RPG and also a great... Call of Cthulhu event. There's a set of folks who do what's called U2 Ken Cthulhu.
Just outstanding.
They're just amazing events, and I've played in a couple of them. But everybody knows that now. Yeah. And so even though I was right there when event registration started and I hit go on my button there, I was not able to get tickets for any of those events.
You know, well, let's talk about event reg itself, because... it's been, in the past, an oft maligned. I know I've been just a big detractor of it because the site always seems to just kind of crash and it kicks you out. And then by the time you get back in, you can't sign up for any events.
Right.
You know, it was terrible, and it seemed like every year they just kind of offered some little email and said, oh, we're going to work on it. And it never happened.
Wink, wink. Yeah.
Yeah. And it never happened. It never happened. And then this year, They did a complete overhaul on it. They did, you know, they changed the site itself. They did load testing. So everything leading up to Event Reg checked out by me. It looks like they had fulfilled their promise, and they're like, we're going to really work on this, and we're gonna make it good. And so Event Reg Day happened, and for me, I think it worked well. I mean, it's going to be a crapshoot either way you deal with it, because you just have so many people registering for a small amount of slots.
Yeah, literally thousands of people. I think they said that they had over 3,000 wish lists put together at the point when you know it hit go at noon on that Sunday. Just to kind of go into it real quick, the way that they did it this year, in the past you'd find your events and then you would basically click to add them to your cart. And, you know, and everyone's doing that all at the same time, and the thing would time out and it would go blank, and you wouldn't know where, you know, if your stuff actually went through or not. And then, yeah, like Cody said, by the time 45 minutes later, it says, oh, nothing actually got added, or all of your events were full. and then you slam your hand down on the table and you break your computer and it sucks.
No.
But this year, you far ahead of time, were allowed to add things to your wish list. And then when you went to your wish list and had all your events that you wanted to kind of queued up there, you could prioritize them. And then there was a big button that said, process wish list or add wish list to my cart or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then above that, they had this giant timer and, you know, counting down. And at the point when that got to zero, then that button would light up and you could hit it. And it would basically process things in a methodical, sequential fashion, near as I could tell.
Yeah.
I'm not as much of a computer guy as I used to be. But and what happened is you would click it and it would say, processing wish list, you know, you are 746th in line. And, you know, I liked that a lot because, you know, at least I knew, you know, maybe I'm going to get screwed out of my events because I'm so far back in line. And maybe that was kind of a crapshoot. But at least I know where I'm at. And I know that I'm in the system.
Yeah, yeah. It was really smart just to be able to, you could put everything on a list beforehand. And then when it came time to register, you just pressed a button. And then, you know, of course, everyone's pressing that button at the same time. So you might be 200, you might be 1,000. But yeah. You got the same chance as everyone else. You can pick your events and then go and see what happens.
Yeah.
So a huge step forward. You know, I've been on in the last few years. I know my wife's sick of hearing me complain about how bad the reg system was, but leaps and bounds, so much better this year. And I think if they can just do a little better to take that initial hit of people, which I know is tough, but then I think they've got a great system on their hand, as good as they're going to get. Because, you know, if you have 1,000 people going for 12 slots, you know, it's...
what are you going
to
do?
Well, what can you do? You
know? Exactly.
So big props to Gen Con. And if you haven't, if you're planning to go and you haven't yet, go to GenConReg.com. You can get your badge, you can get your events, and sign up for fun.
Yeah, sign up before June the somethingth, because that's when... my badge pre-registration ends, so it would definitely behoove you to go ahead and get your badge now, even if you don't sign up for any events, because after that, then the badge prices go up a whole lot, and then you have to actually buy the badge at the con when you get there, and I do not recommend that.
Yeah, if we were to offer only one tip for Gen Con, it's buy your badge in advance, because otherwise...
And get it shipped to you.
And the cool kids get it shipped to them. I know a few people are just really staunch will call people, but whatever. But... even if you will call, just buy it ahead of time. Otherwise, you're going to, at best, lose a half of a day standing in line to buy a badge, or at worst, lose about a whole day standing in line.
Right.
So don't be a dummy pre-reg.
It's a great feeling coming in on a Thursday with your badge in hand and your tickets in hand. You just walk by the huge line and say, hey, guys, I'm off to my game. I want to mention one other convention thing before we move on here. And that is, I think that we had said in previous episodes that this year, Cody and I were not going to be able to make it to Origins.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that for me was because I thought that I was planning on maybe trying to go back to BGGCon this year in November in Dallas. And it just so happens that BGGCon sold out super duper fast, like before I was able to get my badge in. So I do not have a badge for BGGCon this year. So I've decided that I am going to go ahead and go to Origins this year. So I've gotten my badge for Origins. I went ahead and reserved my hotel room. I'll be there from Friday afternoon through Sunday. So it'll be just me. But if you happen to be going to Origins this year, I'll probably be in the boardroom almost the whole time.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll, you know, hope to hang out with Tom Vass a little bit if I'm able to. You know, he's got his great Wits and Wagers game that goes on during the con. And so you can find me at Origins and feel free to come up and say hi.
All right, well, it's time to review what has taken the gaming community by storm, I dare say.
By storm.
By storm, and that is the Lord of the Rings, the card game. It's the latest in the Living Card Game series from Fantasy Flight Games, which kind of it plays a lot like your standard CCG, but without the blind purchases. About every month or so, they come out with, in this game's case, chapter packs that kind of refresh your deck and give you new things to play with. But you never have to buy a bunch of blind booster packs and things like that. So
it seems more alive. It seems like a living card.
It does seem like a living card. But they've done this in the past. You know, they have the Game of Thrones card game. They have Call of Cthulhu. They have Warhammer Invasion. So this is the latest entry into that series, but this is the first one that is a cooperative game, and it uses the Lord of the Rings universe, and it uses that very popular time period between The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings proper that, like, every game is set in between.
Apparently a whole lot of crap went on during that time.
And I'm like, I'm not a big Tolkien scholar, so I don't know what's going on, but...
Yeah.
We're going to break it down for you and tell you if this is a quest that you need to go on.
Oh, my goodness.
See what I did there?
Yes.
That's radio magic.
Yikes. All right. Well, the Lord of the Rings, it's called the Lord of the Rings, the card game, which I think is too many the's, but that's what it's called. Designed by Nate French here in 2011 by Fantasy Flight Games. the game is for 1 to 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
So this game can be played solo, and as Cody will attest to later, probably plays pretty well solo.
Yeah, and you can even play 3 to 4 players if you have another core set.
All right. Yes, but just the core set that you're going to get will be just 1 to 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
And the game comes with 226 cards, and that is going to be broken up into 4 different sort of standard pre-constructed decks.
Mm-hmm.
This game deals with, what are they called, the different...
Spheres of influence.
Spheres of influence,
yeah,
right.
If you... we're going to make a lot of magic references just because you have to.
Yeah.
Think of the decks, the little kind of starter decks, as like a single-color deck would in Magic. You know, everything is very focused around one theme. There's not a lot of dabbling, but it does give you rules on how to build your own.
Right, and when you build your own, you would probably have maybe 2
you
of these spheres.
You probably have 2 and no more, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some rules that will go along with that. But in the core set, you're just going to get 1 deck per sphere, and those are Spirit, Lore, Leadership, and Tactics.
Nicely done.
Thank you. And so you're going to choose 1 of those 4 decks to play, and the game also comes with these cool threat counters. Threat is sort of the... it's a scoring thing, but it's more like a bad scoring thing.
Yeah, like, it's almost like a countdown timer to destruction.
Right, right. And the game, one of the ways the game can end is that if you get to 50 threat, then your character is out of the game, or you're out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna get that. That's a real nice little thing. It's got the patented or patent pending, who knows, Fantasy Flight dial system.
Yeah, there's
dials you can put together that have shown up on lots of boards recently. So you get those. You're also gonna get some tokens. Tokens to represent wounds. Tokens to represent resources, and tokens to represent progress on these quests. We're gonna be going on quests. Talk about that in a second. So you get those 4 decks of cards, and you're also going to get quite a number of cards that are about building these, again, what's the terminology for it? It's like a encounter deck?
Yes, the encounter deck.
Right. And then you also have these cards that are your quest that you're
mm-hmm.
Trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and the game comes with 3 quests, and the quest is basically like the story or the scenario that you're going to be playing against. They have good replay value. A couple of them have nice little twists in them, so that's kind of neat. And these chapter packs will introduce more of those later on.
Yeah, and so the idea of the game is that as you're progressing through the turns, which we'll go through in a second, you're trying to make progress on whatever the top card is on your quest. And it'll have some kind of flavor on it as to what you're doing. You're traveling through this area to give this message to this person or whatever. And it'll tell you that you need a certain number of progress tokens on the card to be able to complete that card and then move on to the next one. So you're trying to kind of get through these cards so that you can get to the very last one, which will sort of tell you what your victory condition is and what you need to do to win. And but along the way, you're going to be stopped by lots of things. You'll be stopped by, sidetracked by other locations that you might have to go to. And you also are going to get sidetracked by a lot of nasty monsters that are going to attack you. So each deck starts off with 3 hero cards that are played immediately face up in front of you. And they're very thematic from the Lord of the Rings universe. And so like I think the leadership deck has Aragorn in mm-hmm. it. And I was playing the tactics deck, which has Gimli.
And Legolas.
And Legolas, among others. So you have those cards out in front of you, and that sort of represents your adventuring party. But you're also going to be able to recruit allies and other folks that are going to help you. So you're going to start off by putting those 3 cards in front of you. You're going to shuffle up your deck, and then you're going to sort of set up your encounter deck and your what's called the staging area, which is where your quest is and all the things that come after it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have your encounter deck face down. You'll have your quest cards that are stacked in the right order. And then you'll have the potential, this open area sort of in the middle where other cards are going to be played. Right.
It's right.
It's called the staging area. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of your turn, you'll just determine a start player. Each player is going to add resources to each of their heroes. So the resources are kind of like money that you're going to spend to summon cards. using magic terminology.
It's kind of like mana.
It's kind of like mana. Yeah, so that's going to be what you spend in order to get cards out of your hand. So each one of your heroes will gain a resource. You just plop a token on each one of those guys. And then each player will draw a card. And then at that point, You're going to have the opportunity to play cards out of your hand. You know, heroes and allies and any other kind of things. There are lots of cards called there's cards called events, which sort of act as instants. But I can't help it.
I know.
You got to use the magic terminology. They can be played on your turn or out of turn, depending on what the card says.
Right.
Like many card games, everything's going to be driven by what the card says. So you sort of have to read, and it'll tell you when you can play it. But these might be cards that will give bonuses to your creatures. I said creatures. I can't stop it. Might give armor and attachments and things like that onto your guys. So you'll be able to play those cards. Then at that point, then you're going to do what's called, and that's called the planning phase. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to do what's called the quest phase. And at this point, then you have to choose, each player both simultaneously will choose which characters they want to go on the quest. Mm-hmm. And remember, the quest is the reason is what you're trying to get through to get to the end of the game here.
Yeah, and to jump in, the starting with this phase, you start to see the real, the hard choices of this game because... to send a character on a quest, or later, as we'll talk about, to defend against attacks, or to attack, you'll have to exhaust.
Tap is a registered trademark, which is what goes LLC.
I don't think they're an LLC. But you have to exhaust them or tap them. Basically, unless there's some special ability in play, if you send them to quest, they won't be able to defend or attack later. And each character... Both the heroes and the allies are going to have three stats. They have a willpower stat, which is used for questing. They have an attack and a defense stat. Right. So it's a lot of, and a lot of the good characters, they may have a two in everything. And you're like, well, what do I want to use them for this turn? So there are a lot of tough decisions to be made.
Yep. Where your guys are going to go is probably the most difficult decisions because the quests are how you win, how you progress in the game, but... you commit to those, then you're just going to cause pain to all of your guys and make it more difficult for future quests. When you commit a character to a quest, like Cody said, you will exhaust the character, turn the card to the side. And every character will have some sort of a willpower value. There's really not that many stats on these cards. There's like willpower, an attack value, a defense value, a couple other numbers, a number of wounds.
Mm-hmm.
But then the willpower value is sort of, you're going to take and add up all of the willpower values from the people that you've decided to go on the quest. Then you're going to look at your staging area. And at the very beginning of the game, there won't be any cards there. So,
there might be, depending on the quest.
That's true. Some of the quests have like setup conditions that'll draw cards. You're going to take that number, and then you're going to draw cards out of the encounter deck.
One per player.
And those are going to go next to the quest card in a line in this staging area. And each one of those cards will have what's it called?
It's called threat as well.
Okay, so, like a threat value, right? And so you're going to take the amount of willpower total of the characters that are on the quest and then subtract from that the threat value of the cards that are in the staging area. And if there's more willpower than there is threat, then whatever the difference is, that's how many progress tokens you'll get to put on the quest card. If the reverse is true and you have... maybe 3 willpower and 5 threat, well, then that means that that's a deficit of 2, and each player will add 2 to their threat dial.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll start off with a pretty high amount of threat. The threat is determined by a statistic on each of your hero's cards, and I think for most decks it's around 30, right?
Yeah.
And if you get to 50, then you're out of the game. So you got to be real careful about managing that threat. So... hopefully you'll get progress tokens, but maybe not. You might get threat, but that would be the end of the quest phase there, is after you resolve that quest. So now the things that have come out onto the staging area might be locations, or they might be bad guys, enemies. And so then you have one more decision to make before we start dealing with enemies, and that's called the travel phase.
Yeah, so when you get to the travel phase, you can pick, a lot of them are just locations, and the locations will act as a buffer between you and the current quest. You can only be at one location at a time, but the nice thing is if you choose to travel to a location, you take that card off of the staging area, and its threat will not count toward that total, so it'll be easier to progress toward the quest itself. However, whenever you get progress tokens, you have to put them first on the location, clear it, and then it goes to the quest itself. However, the locations will have values, like they may only need two or three progress tokens to pass. And sometimes you get a beneficial or a baneful effect from going on it, but you know, it just acts as something to get that threat off the board, because that as we found when we played, if you let that get out of hand, you're done.
If you're in a huge deficit every turn, then it's real hard to turn that around.
Yeah.
Especially if you get like four or five locations on your staging area, that's bad news.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to check. It just seemed like, especially since you can only go to one location at a time.
Yeah.
You know, like we were playing a game where we had like four or five locations out, and we were already at one, and it's like, well, you know, we're trying to get rid of these cards, but we can't.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you're going to, in the travel phase, decide whether you want to pick one of those locations and make that your active location. Right. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So then after that, you're going to do what's called the encounter phase. And so this is where you're going to, you have the option to choose an enemy to engage with you. Mm-hmm. And so each enemy has a, is it a threat value or is it some other
threat
kind
value,
of
a, I believe.
Okay. And what's going to happen is you can choose, you can look at the list of the enemies that are in the staging area and say, I want to fight that guy. And so you can just bring that card in front of you and that card becomes engaged with you. Each player will have the opportunity to choose a card to engage or an enemy to engage with. Then after that, or you don't have to. You don't have to. Right. Sometimes it's a good idea not to do that, because then what's going to happen is that engagement checks are going to be made, and some enemies will engage you anyway, even if you don't want them to. And that is based upon the amount of threat that you have in comparison to the amount of threat that the enemy has. If the enemy has more threat than you have, then he's not going to engage with you. If he has the same amount of threat or less, then there's a potential that he will engage with you. And by potential, I mean that it just sort of depends on, are you the active player or not, and how much threat do you have in comparison, and so forth. So you'll resolve all that, and then enemies may come and engage with you. So mm-hmm. you could end up being engaged with, you know, maybe two cards at a time.
Yeah, and you may ask why you would want to, you know, because there's that, the first choice is, do you want to engage any? You have the choice, and then the second one is the auto engagement. And you may want to know why you would both choose one and have one automatically engage. And that is, it's a lot like the locations. You want to get these things, threat values, off of the board, because the whole thing revolves around the quest. And if you can complete all the stages, you know, that's how you win. So, you know, it may be, you know, taking a risk and having more enemies engaged with you, but at least gets them off that staging area and lowers that threat number.
Exactly. And, you know, and actually just kind of looking through the rules here, that number at the top that determines whether you're engaged, that's called the engagement cost.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
So that, you know, that's going to, what you're going to compare with. So then, you know, once you have made these engagement checks, then, you know, these cards are going to be in front of you and you're going to have your combat phase. And then this is where things get even worse for you, because now you're going to deal with what's called shadow cards. And Cody, can you tell us what shadow cards are?
Yeah. So in the combat phase, first all of the enemies will attack, and you can choose to assign a defender to each one. You can only assign one defender for each attacking enemy. If you choose to defend, like I mentioned earlier, you have to exhaust that character, so they will not be able to attack later.
If you are a Magic player, this will be a bit of a change, because usually to defend, you do not have to tap your card.
Mm-hmm.
Here, if you choose to defend, then that character is going to be done and will not be able to attack.
Right. So you'll be doing that, and then once you've determined defenders, or you can say, I'm going to let that orc be undefended, which could be very bad, and you'll hear why now. The shadow cards, each enemy will get a face down card from the encounter deck, and when it's time to resolve combat, or resolve the enemy's attacks, I should say, you'll flip over those cards, and it's kind of dual purpose cards, because some of them will have at the bottom a shadow effect. Some of them won't. If they don't have anything, then you discard it, nothing happens.
That's great news, and you party
absolutely
in the streets.
Yep. But some of them have, you know, a common one you'll see is shadow effect. You know, this enemy gets +1 attack, +3 if it's undefended. And so a lot of them have these gotchas if they're undefended. You know, the game really punishes you for having
not
defending characters. So you'll resolve all those shadow cards, and then you'll compare the enemy's attack value with the assigned defender's defense value. You'll put the difference in wounds, and you'll see if that kills your defender. And you'll just do that with all of the enemies for all of the players.
Right.
You'll then move into the other side of the coin, and that's the heroes attacking the monsters. And this is a little different, because you can have multiple characters attack one monster. And what you'll do there is you'll just add up the total attack value of all the characters involved and then compare that against the defense side of the monsters and then assign wounds. Combat, pretty simple.
Yeah, very simple. And this is where some of the interesting potential combos can come into effect, especially if you're going to start building decks for this. For example, in the tactics deck that I was playing with, I had Legolas and Gimli, and then Gimli I had attached a card that was like a special sword that was gave you plus one attack against orcs. Mm-hmm. But it also had an ability that didn't have to do with orcs that just said that if you attack with this character and he kills, is part of an attack that kills a character, an enemy, then you get to add a progress token to the quest immediately. And then I had Legolas, which his normal ability is that if he participates in a attack that kills an enemy, two progress counters get added. So if you can put yourself in a position where both of those guys with Gimli with the sword attached are attacking one enemy and defeat him, then you get three progress tokens, which
that's huge.
Yeah, and especially in a game where you have a lot or having a lot of problems with threat and with willpower and getting guys on quests and you're in a deficit or whatever, that might be the best way to get progress tokens on your quests. So I thought that was kind of interesting, mm-hmm. the way those cards play together. So yeah, combat gets resolved like that. It's very simple. It's really straightforward. And like I said, the stats on the cards are easy to read. They're easy to add up. It's not like you're dealing with huge numbers. I mean, it's not like Heroes of Graxia or anything where you have to get a calculator out. It's real easy. And then you know, after that is resolved, then you have what's called the refresh phase, where you're going to refresh all your cards. You stand untap. Them up. You untap them all. And then each player will raise their threat level by one. So that's always going to be going up no matter how well you're able to manage the threat with your questing. It's always still going to go up by one. So there's like a little ticking counter mm-hmm. in the game. And then the start player token will pass to the left, you know, and usually in a two-player game they'll just pass back and forth. And you'll just repeat.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much the overall basics of the game. You're going to continue on trying to get through those quest cards. And when you get to the bottom one, there'll be a condition of how you can win the game. And then there you go. Now, the ways that you can lose, because it's a co-op game, there's several ways that you can lose. If both of your both players lose all of their heroes, mm-hmm. the heroes are sort of the determining factor of whether you're are alive or not.
Right.
So you can get a whole bunch of allies and helpers out on the board, but you got to keep at least one of your heroes alive or the game is going to be over for you. Also, if your threat level ever gets to 50 or higher, then you're also going to lose the game. I think those are the only losing conditions.
Yes, I believe so.
And that's plenty, let me tell you. So that's the Lord of the Rings, the card game. And Cody, what was your impression of this one?
It was interesting. I really liked the idea of the LCG, even though I've not really played many of them. I like the idea. I'm not real big on co-op, so I kind of that was a strike against it for me. I know a lot of people like co-ops, but they don't really do it for me anymore. I thought it was interesting. It the game was not as complex as I thought it would be. I think it's pretty easy to pick up. My concern is that I don't know if it's really a concern, but I mean they're going to have like tournament play for it. Like, how is that going to work, you know?
Yeah, I think there's some cards that have, victory points on them,
mm-hmm.
where, you defeat some particular monster, yeah. it'll say victory four, and you can have a combined score, but...
Yeah, I mean, and there's also just a general scoring mechanism, so you can see how well you do. I don't know, I mean, it's a good game, I can appreciate that. I don't know if it does it for me personally, so I want to be careful on the air here about, it's not a bad game. It's not for me, I don't think. I mean, I think I would play it, but I don't know if it would be a purchase for me.
Okay. I really liked it, and I would say, if we're using our patent-pending rating system with buy points, try points, and deny points, buy points for this one, as usual for Fantasy Flight games, the cards are beautiful, the artwork mm-hmm. is awesome. The readability of everything is really good. The rule book, I think, is pretty decent. That's always a plus in Fantasy Flight's favor, I guess. I really like the mechanics in the game, and I think it's very fresh. It has combat, it has the tapping and unto mm-hmm. refreshing, whatever you want to call it, which, that may seem stale to some people. But the way that the questing part works, and that's very different from any other collectible card game I've ever played. And I was very concerned about the cooperative aspect of it as well, because the more more pure co-ops I play, the more I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten to the point where I want to kind of get rid of my copy of Pandemic because I just don't like it. I don't like, we've talked about it before, the whole one person sort of takes over the game, you know, or you have the more active people and the more passive people, you know, what do you want to do? Oh, here's three things you could do on your turn. Oh, I don't know. Just tell me what I should do. Should I move here? You know, that I think does exist a little bit in this game because, you know, you're still, there's a lot of things you can do in the game and a lot of decisions you can make what you're going to do. And you could have one person who's saying, oh, I think you should do this, you should do that, and have the other person be kind of passive about it. But it just didn't feel that like that for me. You know, I was playing with Cody. He and I, you know, pretty equally matched as far as opinions and everything. So, so I don't think you're going to run into that much of a problem with it, but it's not for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good game. It's a real good game. Matter of fact, it's such a good game, I'm thinking about buying the copy that Cody got on GameShare.
Yeah.
It falls into that category in the middle of collectible card games. I mean, that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not a real fan. You know, we haven't really done our points, I guess, necessarily, but it's kind of like...
We're going rogue.
I guess, you know. Yeah. You know, I echo what John said. The production value is top-notch. It's FFG quality stuff. But for me, you know, it just doesn't scratch any itches because it's like I don't like co-op games. I'm not that big into the CCG style of stuff anymore just because... You know, I don't really like the deck building aspect of it. I'm not one of the combo guys. And I know people are like that and they really like that, and that's great. But I don't know. And Lord of the Rings, I'm just kind of a passive fan, especially in this kind of dark time period. I don't really, you know, I almost would prefer it if it were based off of the books that, you know, like the three main books. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's worth trying out if you like the LCG format, if you and you like the idea that it could be cooperative. And or you really like Lord of the Rings, you know, I think you'll really like this game because there's some good things. Like John said, it's got a lot of fresh mechanics, which are kind of hard to find in LCG, CCGs, or TCGs, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're someone who likes, well, if you like Lord of the Rings, I think it might be a buy for you anyway, just because it's very cool. The artwork is cool. The theme, I think, is done pretty well for being a card game. And if you like CCGs and deck building games, now I'm not saying like Dominion, I'm talking about like actual CCGs where outside of the game you build your deck and then bring it into the game. I think you'll like this one a lot because I could already see with some of those combinations of, boy, if I had three of this card and I had some more of this kind of card, then, you know, I could really do a whole lot better. The problem for me is that I don't have the mind for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And some people, when they play a game like this, the gears just start turning, you know?
Yeah.
And they want to go home and buy all the chapter packs and sit at home and build this amazing deck and get a piece of paper out and write down how many of, you know, Gandalfs they want in their in their deck. I'm not that guy. But having said that, being that I'm not that guy, I think it's still a good purchase because it's got those four pre-constructed decks, and I think you can still get a lot of mileage out of the game, just the box itself.
Yeah, well, one warning I want to put out there is, the core set will work well for 1 to 2. If you want to play 3 to 4, you would have to buy another one. But if you want all the cards available to you for deck building, like if you're a big deck builder fan there, you would need 3 sets of the game. Because with the LCG rules, you can have up to 3 of any card in a deck. So just throwing that out there, if you're buying this with serious play in mind and serious deck building, you will need 3 sets.
Yeah.
So just throwing that out there.
But as a casual game, I think the core set works great.
Yeah. Yeah. My one worry is that, like, if you just stuck to those decks, that the later chapter packs would just destroy you because, you know, because they're assuming you're building a deck.
Sure.
You know, building a real deck, so to speak.
Yeah, it's tough. It's kind of like kind of a teeter-totter thing of the whole CCG thing. It's like, how much do you really want to buy into the LCG format? I think that ends up being a huge part of it.
Yep.
You got an overall rating?
It's a definite try. I mean, it's you really have to look at the surface and see if it appeals to you. You know, if you like cooperative games, especially if you like the idea of a cooperative CCG, I think you'll really like it. If you don't like either of those, I don't know if this is going to change your mind because it didn't change my mind. But
yeah, I think I probably feel exactly the same way, sort of right down the middle for me. I may pick it up. I think, like I said, I think I am going to purchase it just because I think that I have a lot of situations where I could get the core game to the table, a casual game, you know, played not played that often. But I think one benefit of the game is I think you can, the barrier to entry is pretty low, you know.
Oh, yeah.
As I think you can teach this game pretty quickly and have people understand what's going on and have it not be confusing. It's got a little bit of complexity, but not like some of the games out there. Like Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones card game, I thought was quite a bit more complex than this one was. But you know, it is what it is. It's a collectible card game. You know,
a living card game.
So if this seems like something that's interesting to you, then feel free to check it out. The Lord of the Rings, the card game from Fantasy Flight Games. Well, friends, welcome once again to another episode of the GM Academy, featuring Chancellor Cody L. Jones.
Hello.
Presiding. Chancellor Jones, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. We have two.
Oh.
Two entries in the GM Academy. Folks that are begging for your help.
Of course.
And your sage wisdom. The first is from Wade Kemper, who writes, "Hey there, guys."
Hello.
By guys, I think he means Chancellor Cody L.
Jones. Of course.
not me. I tend to write long-winded emails, so I'll get to the point. And here we go.
Appreciate it.
Yes. After 20 years of gaming with Grognards, I found a new 4th edition D&D group consisting of some old friends, new friends, and my wife. We're trying to rope the babysitter into playing, but that's another story for another email.
Ooh. Well, then who will watch the kid?
Juicy. The problem is that one of our players is cut from a completely different cloth. He's 26, we're all 33+. And his origins in gaming were firmly rooted in video games.
Dun, dun, dun.
As a result, he wants instant gratification, high levels of play, a world dripping in magic, and the need to roll for every little thing. For a specific event, he insists on using knowledge checks to gain details on monsters in combat. We all hate that idea. The rest of us have been playing since 2nd edition, Redbox for me, and we have a more story character-driven style. I won't bore you with more specifics, but rest assured, if the rest of the group likes X, he'll go for Y. I understand that D&D can support all styles of play, but his playstyle turns into metagaming, and it's ruining people's enjoyment by questioning all of our moves, making connections of unchosen options, and interrupting or correcting the DM as he's unfolding scenes in action.
Terrible.
Chancellor Jones is already shaking his head over there.
Oh, my gosh.
He also recently brought up how much he hates playing in the homebrew world I've created and publicly pointed out his disdain for it because it doesn't suit his high magic, low danger style. He even went so far as to suggest he might be happier finding another group. So I called his bluff. I said, go ahead. I told him he'd be happier. No hard feelings. He backed down.
Well, too bad.
Things have gotten worse. The gap in playstyle has widened, but we all genuinely like him as a person, and we all plan on hanging out away from D&D. If he had taken my offer, it would have been a cleaner, civilized break. All of this new back and forth and kowtowing and appeasement on our end has made it even tougher to cut him loose. Any thoughts or advice?
Wow. Well, I think the first thing you have to do is I think you have to pull him aside, just him and you, and say, if it's that bad and you've really kind of had this kind of run in before, I think you just have to say, you know, I don't think this game is for you. You know, we're still cool as friends. You know, we also like hanging out, but I just don't think this style is really for you. And then along with that, I would say, you know, why don't you try running a game? And don't say it's snarky, but just be like, hey, you know, it seems like you have a lot of good ideas. You know, spin it around and just be like, seems like you have a lot of good ideas. You know, why don't you run a game and, you know, we'll do that. So then you can kind of get your play style in if you want to do that. By doing that, you kind of you put the ball in his court, and then as a DM, he'll see how obnoxious it could be. Not that I'm suggesting that you interrupt him or contradict him, but I mean, I've known a lot of people that have disparaged DMing or GMing until they do it, and then they realize that just how much work it is, and they're like, man, it's like I've been a jerk. but I think if you've gone this far with it, I think you just have to pull them aside and say, you know, this isn't working out. You know, we still want to hang out outside of the game, but you know, it's obvious you're not enjoying yourself, and to be honest, we're not enjoying ourselves. You know, just because we're looking for two different things. So, you know, I'd say either start your own game, and you know, we'd be happy to try it, or you know, let's just, you know, we'll do other things together, but let's not have D&D be one of them. Because if you have, you know, if you have like five people in a group and one sour apple, and it's just you're just butting heads for so long, you know. It's not worth it because no one's going to have fun. You just need to take them aside and say, you know, I think we need to cut the cord here.
Yeah, it seems like when he says that his friend here went so far as to suggest that he might be happier finding another group. I mean, he either said that for one of two reasons. Either A, he really would be happier finding another group, or he was using it just as a, you know, basically a mind game to just sort of, you know, manipulate you and you know, get you to say, oh, no, we don't do that, you know. You don't need that kind of a toxic personality right. in your group, you know.
So that's what I'm saying. When you bring him aside, it's not so much give him the option. You know, don't say, hey, you know, if you feel this way, hey, you know, why don't you look at it? It's like, you should probably find, you know, another group, you know.
Got to make a clean break there.
Yeah, I think you have to.
It's tricky. I mean, it's like breaking up with your girlfriend or whatever, you know. But you got to make the clean break sometimes.
Yeah, people too. Skills on. I mean, that's tough. But, you know, but if this guy is dogging your homebrew world and interrupting your style of play, I mean, that's just rude, you know. He needs to go.
Yeah. That youngster that he is at 26.
I know.
Right? You know?
As an old man of 28.
Yeah. Well, I'm in his group. I'm 33 plus, so, you know, I could be in that group.
It's a big plus sign.
Yeah, except I really like high magic, low danger styles of play, so I'm not sure if I'd fit in. All right, so, Wade, I hope that answers your question. Chancellor Jones, thank you
very much. Let us know how it goes, Wade. Follow up with us.
All right. And so our next question comes via voicemail.
Ooh.
And this is from Kyle.
Hey, Cody and John. My name is Kyle, and I've got a few questions. I've played D&D on and off for a little while, and I'm looking to start a new group with some friends, but they're a bit uncomfortable with the D&D universe, specifically stuff like magic and demons. So I've been looking for alternatives. Since we all really like Firefly, the Serenity RPG seemed like a good choice. So I've got just the basic questions. Do you guys recommend it? Do you have any experience with it? How does it compare to D&D? Anything else that you suggest? I guess on a different note, and just trying to save my curiosity, what are the Game On studios? Is there a special place that you guys go to record this stuff, or is it more of a in-your-garage type project? Well, anyways, thanks for all you guys do. I really enjoy the show, and it's quickly become my favorite gaming podcast after I heard you guys on the Dice Tower a couple weeks back. Anyways, take it easy, and happy gaming.
All right, thank you, Kyle. Okay, so the Game On Studios. Would you like to expound upon what the Game On Studios are?
Yeah, we have a 60-acre complex in central Indiana. It has the finest in recording technology.
It's a $450 million facility.
That's right, and that's where we bring Game On with Cody and John to you, the people.
That's right. No.
No, I'm sorry.
It is Cody's game room with two microphones and a four-channel mixing board and a portable digital recorder. Unless we're at my house, in which case it's two microphones and a mixing board at my house.
Right.
So, but you know, wherever Cody and John are, that's where the Game On Studios reside.
We have the mobile studio.
Exactly. Exactly. So, glad you're enjoying all the products that are coming out of the multi-million-dollar facility. All right. So, moving on to what he was saying about the folks in his gaming group not so keen on like the D&D stuff
sure.
with the demons and the magic and stuff. So, he asked about Serenity.
Yeah. I've not played it. I have looked through the book, and I'm pretty familiar with the system, and I've played similar systems to it. I think that's going to be a great fit, especially if you're all fans of the show. I think that's going to be an excellent fit. Now, John, you've played it.
I actually have. A game I've played that Cody has, and it's amazing. Yeah, I actually just got a chance to play this, excuse me, as a con game where the GM was just running, since it was a convention game, she just ran the TV characters. So we played the actual cast of the show and the crew of Serenity. And it was a lot of fun. I got to play Jane Cobb, which was really great, you know. And the system, I think the Cortex system is a pretty solid system. It's based upon basically everything except for D20, and you know, so you're rolling a combination of two dice. You have like an attribute and I forget the names for it, but it's like an attribute and a skill or something like that. Like so if you're going to do piloting, then you would do intelligence plus piloting, which might be D8 plus D4, and then you have some sort of a difficulty that you're measuring against. And but I think it flows very well. They use a system of plot points, which is a whole lot like Benny's in Savage Worlds or
style points
in Hollow Earth Expedition. So it's a real good way for, you know, there to be good interaction between the players and the GM of, you know, no, I want to do this extraordinary thing, and you spend those points, or I want to re-roll this die, and there's a lot of back and forth there, and those flow very freely. Actually, the GM that was at the game that I played at, she used these like metal they're like metal coins with a hole in the middle of them that had like Chinese writing on them. Cool. So if she had like speakers with the music in the background, and she actually ran the game. You might want to consider this if you're going to do it. It might work this way. She ran it like an episode of the TV show. And so she had like the opening scene, and then she actually said, you know, scene and cut to credits. And then she actually played the music from the theme music. So the whole thing played out like a TV show. So.
And I think you told me that, like, even during the game, she would just be like, and the camera pans to, I mean, that's something I've got to try. It's like D&D, that's hard to do. But,
one, you're already thinking in terms of the television show. And so, you got the cinematic sort of thing in your head while you're playing the game. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. And I think if your group all likes Firefly, then I think that's a winner for you.
Yep.
What are some suggestions that you'd have?
I would throw out Hollow Earth Expedition, as I'm wont to do. That's a great kind of rules light pulp action, you know, if they like the 1930s and Mummy, Indiana Jones, stuff like that. That's a great choice. If they want to do fantasy, but they don't necessarily want to do like the magic stuff, I would actually recommend Savage Worlds.
With fantasy.
Yeah. And you can also pick up the fantasy companion for it, though it's not necessary. I think you can play just with the core rules, because there you can, magic is much easier to take out because it's just kind of an optional thing you can add on anyway. You just take that part out. And if you just want to run kind of a low fantasy sort of thing, it's very easy to do. And with $10 rule books and pretty easy to learn rules, that may be a good choice as well.
Yeah. Outstanding. So, good job, Chancellor Jones.
Thank you.
Kyle, hopefully that's helpful to you. And, you know, let us know how it goes as you get your group started and everything. You know, stay in contact with us and, you know, let us know. So I think that is what we have for the GM Academy for this episode. Chancellor Jones, do you have any final words for us?
Study hard and don't be a grognard.
Okay. Well, let's now move on to the Game On Inbox proper.
All right, well, it's time for the Game On Inbox, where we answer all of your emails, voicemails, and burning questions. If you'd like to write us at the Game On Inbox, you can do so by emailing us at
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Or calling the Game On hotline.
413-8-GAME-ON. It's 413-8... Oh, no, I totally forgot them. It's 413-8-GAME-ON.
Nicely done. He wants to avoid the blooper.
413-842-6366.
Okay. So our first...
Did I avoid the blooper?
You edit. So I made the logo, so I don't know.
Okay.
Our first email is from Corey Gerleman, and he writes to us about dice trays. And he says, "Hey guys, Dwarven Sweatshop might be out of business." And we actually did, you know, I'll do an aside here. We did get another email. Apparently they're still in business.
Oh.
They're just... they just have a really small website. I don't even think they go to cons anymore, but you can still order their products.
Really?
Yeah.
It was updated recently? Like the website was up?
Within the past year, but it seemed like they were still fulfilling orders. And
interesting.
So, I don't know.
We never know. It could be just like some guy out of his garage. And
that's probably what it is.
He launched something a little bit bigger for the con and everything, and then, you know, but he'll still make you.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're just speculating. Yeah. But
you may not want to buy it after this. He says, "It might be out of business, but never fear. Making your own dice tray is as simple as it gets. I can't speak for your local craft shop, but mine, Hobby Lobby," we would say Hobby Lobby or Michael's, "has a whole row of various unfinished wooden pieces ranging from bird feeders to picture frames to, you guessed it, trays in an elongated octagonal shape. The great thing is they have several sizes, and smaller ones will fit right down inside some larger ones, allowing you to store them together much easier. Anyway, they only cost about $2. You stop by the felt section and pick up a few selections of, they have these like felt that's like, has an adhesive back to it.
Oh, really?
You sand the tray a little bit, stain it however you want. You cut the felt to fit the bottom and or the sides if you'd like. And then you just put it together. And so for less than $5, you can make your own trays that look and perform great. So he's love listening to the various ways geeks like us pimp out and customize our games. Keep up the good work. I tried this myself a while back. I've got a really shoddy looking dice tray in there. I did it too quick. I'm not a very good craft guy because it's like I'm too impatient. But yeah, you really can get one of these pieces at Michael's or Hobby Lobby, get a little thing of stain and some felt, and you can get a functional dice tray. It may not be as fancy as a Dwarven Sweatshop, but it'll do the job.
What would those be used for normally. I mean, those trays. I mean, it's not like whatever company's making them is probably not making them to be dice trays. I don't know. It's just kind of a strange thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question, actually. I had no idea.
Anyway, okay. Well, that's cool. So, Corey, thanks for that. Our next email is from Trent Howell from the great blog and video podcast, the Board Game Family.
Check him out at theboardgamefamily.com.
Is it a video podcast or might just be video reviews?
A little of both, and they have some written reviews as well.
Yeah, good stuff. Mm-hmm. So, Board Game Family. And Trent says, just listened to episode 63 and heard you mention playing Wrath of Ashardalon with your kids and that it went well for 45 minutes at least. In regards to playing in a family setting with kids, I'd also like to get your thoughts on which D&D game you think is better, Castle Ravenloft or Wrath of Ashardalon. Growing up, I had friends that played D&D but never got into it. When Castle Ravenloft came, I started debating about picking up a copy for our family since I heard it was a good introduction to the D&D realm and was nice and digestible. sounds tasty. Then Wrath of Ashardalon came out, and now the debate turns into a choice. Our four kids range from 15 down to 8, so I'm curious, in your opinion, in a battle between the two, which comes out on top for playing with the family? And he says, and Cody, don't feel left out because I'd be interested to hear your opinion as well. Thanks for throwing Cody a bone there, Trent.
It is appreciated.
let's see. I'm not sure if I have a real strong opinion on that. It seemed like either one worked pretty well. What about you?
I would go with Wrath because the small changes they made, like the chamber, the chamber rules are nice. And plus, I think with the family, the theme is more accessible because this is very much, you know, you're going in and everything revolves around fighting a dragon, whether you're fighting its minions or you're going in fighting the dragon itself. The overarching theme is you're going into this volcano and you're fighting a dragon. Where Ravenloft, unless you are familiar with D&D, it's kind of like we're going in, we're fighting a vampire.
We don't really know why.
Yeah, you know. So I would say Wrath of Ashardalon. It's probably easier to find as well. So
yeah, I mean that I'd probably go that way too. And for me, just probably because of just my religious background as well. It's weirder for me to have to try to explain all the vampire dark ritual stuff, you know, than just basic go in and fight the dragon kind of stuff. There, I mean that's just personally me. It's not, you know, not a commentary of any sort, you know, but both of them are equally good games as far as play value.
They're so similar. I don't think you're going to go wrong with one or the other, but if you had to pick for a family game, I'd pick Wrath.
Okay, that's a good choice there. So I would go with that as well. All right, and so the last thing in the Game On Inbox for this episode, we have a voicemail from Terry.
Yes, my name is Terry Bailey Sr. I am one of the founding members of SAGA, Southern Appalachian Gamers Association. And I love listening to your show. It's a great show. This last episode I listened to, you mentioned gaming accessories and how you like poker chips with your power grid. I just wanted to make you aware that MeeplePeople.com has a poker chip set in its own little box container that are smaller poker chips, but they still have that weighty feel of regular poker chips. They're about an inch in diameter, maybe half an inch. In other words, they're a smaller chip. Great for power grid, great for other games, and it stores up small with its little box. So it's great to take with you when you go to game night and things like that, when you want to play power grid or most any other game with money in it. Keep up the good work, and thank you guys for putting on the show.
All right, so thanks, Terry, of the Appalachian Gamers Association.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is neat. So you had a chance to go on the website, meeplepeople.com, and check these out, and it looks really neat. I think I might have to pick some of these guys up.
Yeah, the one knock I have against my poker chip set is that it's probably not going to leave the house much because it's very big and very heavy.
Yeah.
I like the full-size chips, but if you're a gamer on the go, I would definitely check these out.
Yeah, awesome. So thanks so much for that information, Terry. All right, I think that just about wraps up the Game On Inbox for this episode. As Cody mentioned at the beginning, if you want to get a hold of us, you can always send us an email at
the Game On Inbox, which is gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's right, or the Game On Hotline, 4138-GAME-ON. You can also start some conversations up in our guild. I mean, we always encourage interaction with us, but you know, we got lots of listeners out there that are participating in our guild on Board Game Geek. It's guild number 576, and you can just kind of click through on like the guilds and podcasts on Board Game Geek. It's pretty easy to find.
Or better yet, go to gameonpodcast.com and click BGG Guild.
Yes, that is the easiest way to do that. Sorry, Cody put the website together. Yeah, go to gameonpodcast.com, click BGG BGG Guild. You'll put you right there. You can join it and start some discussions there about all the stuff we're talking about.
And while you're at the website, check out our donation button. We appreciate all the proceeds that we can get. Everything that we get goes back to you, the listener, whether it's games to review, events to go to, or just a general microphone maintenance, which is out of my realm, so I don't know what happens there, but
microphone like I'm getting a scrub brush or something.
I don't know. You just put the equipment in front of me and I talk. So.
That's true.
John can speak more to that, but we appreciate all donations we can get, and we thank all of you who have donated thus far.
So join us in 2 weeks where we're going to be taking a little bit of a ride on the train.
I see what you did there.
We're going to hop on the train and ride, and going to be looking at some different train games. It's a very popular part of the gaming strangely enough, very popular part of the
Huffing
gaming
Billies
hobby.
Everywhere.
I know. So there's real simple ones and real complex ones, and we're going to just kind of go over some of our favorites and some new ones that we maybe have an opportunity to try, give you a couple of reviews, and, you know, grab a ticket and ride with us.
No good.
Oh, be nice.
I'm just blowing off steam.
Oh, gosh. Oh, it hurts. Okay. That's enough. We got to get out of here. So until next time.
Game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com. Or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at GameOnPodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time... Game on.